Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
Welcome back to Books and Boba. We are a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. I'm Marvin.
And I'm Rira.
And we're here this episode to talk about the July. Was it July?
July
book club pick, Exit West by Mohsen Hamid. But before we get to that, I guess we have some, since it's the top of the month, let's just go through some book news.
Yeah, we're going to go through some new releases and some literary news from the Asian American community. So first on our new releases list is Beautiful Poison by Lydia Kang. It releases on August 1st. I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but it's probably out by now by the time you're listening to this.
I'm hoping it was out yesterday. So,
And it's published by Lake Union Publishing. And the summary goes, in the streets of 1918 New York, the deadly Spanish influenza ripples through the city. But with so many victims in her close circle, young socialite Aline questions if the flu is really to blame. All appear to have been poisoned, and every death was accompanied by a mysterious note. Desperate for answers and dreading her own engagement to a wealthy gentleman, Aline returns to her passion for scientific discovery and recruits her long-lost friends, Jasper and Birdie, for help.
Cool. What else has she written?
She wrote this sci-fi novel called Control.
Okay.
And I think it was in the YA genre. But this one is more on the mystery and,
nice
thriller genre.
Next up, also released on August 1st, is Follow Your Heart by Tasha Nathan, published by Lorimer. Nisha has always been a good Sri Lankan Tamil daughter and tries to meet her parents' high expectations of her becoming a doctor or engineer. Stop me if you've heard this one before. But what Nisha really loves is writing. As she devotes more of her time and attention to her creative writing class, she also finds out who she really loves is her classmate, Todd. Cool. So like romance slash coming of age slash...
Yeah, it's a good summer book. And the final book on our new releases list is A Different Pond, written by Bao Fai and illustrated by T. Bui. Also released on August 1st and published by Picture Window Books. As a young boy, author
Bao Fai?
I don't know.
I think it's Bao Fai.
Bao Fai, okay. Yeah. As a young boy, author Bao Fai awoke early, hours before his father's long workday began, to fish on the shores of a small pond in Minneapolis. Unlike many other anglers, Bao and his father fished for food, not recreation. A successful catch meant a fed family. In this picture book, Bao recounts a memory of his father telling him about a different pond in their homeland of Vietnam.
That's cool. Bao is a very renowned poet.
Yeah, and you know, T-Bui, we all know who she is.
If you haven't checked out our interview with T-Bui, it was a couple months ago that we interviewed her on this podcast, but she has a really great graphic memoir called...
The Best We Could Do.
The Best We Could Do That. That actually, coincidentally, has a lot to do with my thoughts about our July book club pick.
But before we get to that, we have one bit of news.
This is a big thing that happened. Did it happen during Comic-Con or like it was
it happened
like
shortly after?
Yeah,
Comic-Con.
Like the film adaptation of Jenny Han's best-selling novel To All the Boys I Loved Before announced its cast earlier this month. Lana Condor will star as the protagonist, Lara Jean, a high school student whose secret love letters to her past crushes are unexpectedly mailed out. The movie also stars Janelle Parrish and Anna Cathcart as Lara Jean's sisters. Meanwhile, Noah Centineo will play the love interest, Peter Kavinsky. I'm assuming these are all like very popular Disney stars.
I know Janelle Parrish is from Pretty Little Liars.
Okay.
So
like from the young people shows I don't watch anymore from the WB. But that's awesome. She just released the third part of this trilogy, right?
I forgot if it was a trilogy or if it was a four book series. But I remember like when the news came out, it was big, right?
But it wasn't announced that it was gonna be a movie until this announcement, right?
Yeah, they're already into production and everything.
That's awesome.
But the reason why I wanted to like mention this on the podcast is there were some like a lot of people were voicing their complaints about the casting because Laura Jean, the protagonist in the two All the Boys I've Loved Before series, is half Korean, half white, and Lana Condor is Vietnamese American.
Okay.
So a lot of people were saying like, "Oh, like she's not Korean, she's not biracial.
Oh.
You can't just, different Asians are not interchangeable." And it also like brought up issues from the racist white community as well, being like, "Why isn't she white?" And it's like, she's half Korean. It doesn't mean that like she doesn't look Korean. But
what are your thoughts? Because you've read the book before, right?
I have not. Okay. I have not. But I have a lot of friends who are obsessed with the series and who have gone to book readings and book signings, and they seem pretty excited. I mean, Lana Condor was Jubilee in the X-Men Apocalypse movie, although she got cut from the film.
Yeah, I hear they cut a bunch of first. I haven't watched X-Men Apocalypse just mostly because of laziness / like the reviews weren't so good.
Well, I do want to read Jenny Han's tweet when she announced the casting on her Twitter.
She's a very prolific tweeter.
Yeah, she is. So she wrote, "To All the Boys I've Loved Before is going to be a movie. Guys, I'm over the moon. The most important thing for me as the author is seeing an Asian American girl in the starring role. And with this movie, we get to see not one, but three. That is truly groundbreaking. I haven't seen Asian American women centered on the screen since Joy Luck Club, which was nearly 25 years ago. Representation is so important, and this means the world to me. More than anything, I hope that the success of this movie will lead to more opportunities for Asian American actors and writers down the line. I love you all infinitely." And that's from Jenny Han, the author. Personally, like even though I have not read this book, I mean...
It's pretty cool that we have both this and Crazy Rich Asians, which is now in post-production too. So we have there's a lot of movies coming out that feature Asians front and center, and Asian Americans specifically.
I mean, I can understand from the perspective of a lot of like multi-ethnic and biracial fans of this book, because of course you want to see yourself represented.
Right.
But at the same time, I know how hard it is to get a movie made in Hollywood. And I know Jenny Han could have just, let the producers handle it a long time ago. Because this book was optioned like years and years ago.
Okay.
So she really fought hard to have some kind of Asian American lead in the movie adaptation of this book. So just from that, like, I have to really commend her for being stubborn and saying, like, you can't make this movie unless you have, like, an Asian American actress. But like, at the same time, I understand.
I guess what it comes down to, because I haven't read this book, it's not really in my wheelhouse, as people, longtime listeners of this podcast will know, YA romance isn't exactly what I seek out, unless Weaver forces me to read it later on, which she probably will.
Broaden your horizons.
But I think like with adaptations is always going to be tough, right? Even Joy Luck Club, like the movie, those aren't all Chinese American actresses. You know, you had Japanese Americans. Even in Crazy Rich Asians, it's hard. It's tough to get a whole, like, I feel like there's certain, like the battle for that kind of like specificity, is probably down the line at this point.
Yeah, I
agree. Like, I'm excited about just more representation for our younger generation, and it's a problem that will hopefully fix itself. Right, the more people that see themselves on screen, the more people that decide that they want to be on screen, and the more supply that we have, of actresses and actors that can fill those roles.
Yeah, I mean, like if Laura Jean, the protagonist, was just like, was not biracial and she was Korean American, then maybe I would be I'll be like, oh yeah, sure, like a Vietnamese American actress can play that, because like I feel like at that point,
yeah,
like there's really not much you can do. But like when it comes to like when the protagonist is biracial and you cast someone who's not biracial, then yeah, I can understand like the iffiness of it. But at the same time, like I think Jenny Han, you know, she responded in a very diplomatic way, saying like, I hope this movie adaptation opens a lot of doors so they can cast like more specific actors for specific roles. At this point, I don't think we're quite there yet, but yeah. I just hope that it's a good movie. I just like pray that it's going to be a good movie.
It was a very popular book series, so hopefully that'll
it's like
give it
rep
legs.
Sweats. Like, yeah. Like this and like between this and like Crazy Rich Asians. Like,
yeah.
Please be good. Please be good. Oh my God, please be good.
Tell us what your thoughts are about the casting news for Crazy Rich Asians, for All the Boys I Loved Before. If you're a fan, on our Goodreads forums, we'd love to hear what you guys think. As always, please join our Goodreads group, Books and Boba, to connect with us. Thanks to, I feel like more people have been active on the forums lately, so that's cool.
Yay!
But with that out of the way, let's
wait, before we move on to book discussion, because we just... like Comic-Con just ended and stuff. Did you see the Ready Player One trailer?
I didn't watch the full thing. I haven't.
You watched half of a trailer.
I watched it on YouTube, and I think I got this. Well, actually, I did watch. I don't know.
It's only like a minute long.
I haven't read the book, so none of the things like really stood out.
Okay, I'm going to say something probably really controversial, but you know, you can complain about it on Goodreads. Like. Come at me, bro. But like I read Ready Player One and I really love the book.
Really?
Like, I really, really love the book. However, there are some problematic elements to it. Uh-huh. Especially there's this one line where a character like the character is found dead and like the authorities are saying
spoilers.
Like spoilers. Well, I'm not saying which character, but like but the authorities are the character is Asian and like the authorities are like, oh, he like committed suicide.
Mm.
But like the main character in the book is just like, oh, like did he commit seppuku or something along that line?
Oh.
And it's like, there's some bits of that book, but it's done really well. I mean, I can still like a book and still acknowledge that there are some problematic elements to it.
Uh-huh.
But when I watched the trailer, I was really excited for the movie. Because the entire time I was like, oh my God, it's going to be such a good movie if this ever gets made. And I watched a trailer and it was, my expectations for it just tanked. I expect like maybe like a gritty Transformers movie from the uh-huh. trailer that I watched, which is like the complete opposite of
Well, it's a Spielberg joint, right?
I mean, like they're trying to like make it look really action filmy, judging by the trailer. There's a lot of like car chases and like motorcycle like races and like gunfire, and I'm just like, what? Like the battles that are fought in this book are like through wits, through like through very like pop culture references, so it just seemed really out of place. So I'm actually not that excited for the movie now. But I'm hoping that it's still good in its own way.
I have like literally zero expectations because, like the Harry Potter series, I haven't read the books.
Have you read?
I'm just gonna watch the movie, I think.
Have you read Wrinkle in Time? Because that's also another movie.
I have not.
I can't talk to anyone. We need to find someone in our book club who has read these books.
I didn't read a lot of the
young,
watched
the trailers,
like, literary,
and can talk to me on an episode.
Like, I didn't read The Giver. I never read The Hatchet. Never read. I barely got through like Where the Red Fern Grows. I think I bored halfway through. I didn't read any Narnia books. I read like, you know, sideways stories. I read My Teacher's an
Alien. One day we will have
an alien. I read what else did I read?
We're gonna have an episode one day on like
a lot of Goosebumps.
Talk
to me about Goosebumps.
On book to movie adaptations, and we're gonna bring in a third or fourth person in because I don't think Marvin and I can carry on a conversation about this topic.
If you have any thoughts about Rira's non-enthusiasm of Ready Player One, you can sound off.
I can hear the screams over Twitter. Like, how dare you?
Well, Should we go get into our monthly book?
Yeah.
Let's get to Exit West. Do you want to read the jacket?
In a country teetering on the brink of civil war, two young people meet. Sensual and fiercely independent Nadia and gentle, restrained Saeed. They embark on a furtive love affair and are soon cloistered in a premature intimacy by the unrest roiling in their city. When it explodes, turning familiar streets into a patchwork of checkpoints and bomb blasts, they begin to hear whispers about doors. Doors that can whisk people far away, if perilously, and for a price. As the violence escalates, Nadia and Saeed decide that they no longer have a choice. Leaving their homeland and their old lives behind, they find a door and step through.
Yeah. Well, first of all, this was like one of our shorter books that we've read. It was only 230 pages.
Yep.
But I felt like I went on a journey from the beginning to the end.
Yeah, for a very slim novel, there's a lot of story.
There's a lot of story in this.
Yeah. Well, I guess we can just, as always, general impressions.
I liked it. And I think, so we met up over the weekend to talk about this with the local book club here in Los Angeles. And general consensus was pretty positive. Personally, I really enjoyed kind of, I liked reading it. I'm glad I read it. But man, it was stressful. It's a stressful novel.
See, I didn't really find it stressful. I found it very relaxing despite... I mean, the book does depict a lot of violence because it is set during like a war and there's a civil war. But at the same time, like I felt like I was reading a fairy tale. Like Hamid's prose is very lyrical. It's very whimsical. And even like the brutal parts of the book where you see people getting murdered or going through a lot of hardship. I don't know. It's just packaged in like a really like sparse way.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it kind of has like this quiet brutality in its writing. But yeah, strangely enough, it was very relaxing for me to read. Even it's like, oh, like this part's kind of gross. But at the same time, like...
It's very like the situations the protagonists find themselves in is just tense throughout.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like... It doesn't let go. Like it starts with kind of a... It starts with the tension slowly building. And then once it like kind of climaxes, it doesn't let up. Until maybe like the very, very end.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like not exactly relaxed.
I actually want to read the opening paragraph of Exit West. Because I think it sets up the story really well.
Right.
Let me just quickly... So this is the first paragraph from the first chapter. In a city swollen by refugees, but still mostly at peace, or at least not yet openly at war, a young man met a young woman in a classroom and did not speak to her for many days. His name was Saeed, and her name was Nadia, and he had a beard, not a full beard, more a studiously maintained stubble, and she was always clad from tips of her toes to the bottom of her jugular notch in a flowing black robe. Back then, people continued to enjoy the luxury of wearing more or less what they wanted to wear, clothing and hair-wise within certain bounds, of course. And so these choices meant something. It might seem odd that in cities teetering at the edge of the abyss, young people still go to class. In this case, an evening class on corporate identity and product branding. But that is the way of things, which with cities as with life. For one moment, we are pottering about our errands as usual, and the next we are dying. And our eternally impending ending does not put a stop to our transient beginnings and middles until the instant when it does. So that is pretty much like the first page and a half of the book.
Yeah. And so what's really interesting is the book is a story of a relationship. Boy meets girl. And then what happens to the both of them?
Yeah. I guess like the first quarter of the book, I would say, it's just establishing their relationship with each other.
Well, they're courting. They're dating.
Yeah, their courtship.
Set against the backdrop. But what I love about the first chapter, like how the book opens, is it's so like, if you didn't know this took place in a country that was about to go into civil war, it can be anywhere. It's just. Yeah. Two people taking night classes on corporate, like night business, like they're like extension classes that we would take here.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I like the fact that, first off, the city that Saeed and Nadia are living in it's not named.
There's a lot of details that aren't defined, like...
Yeah, even with, like, Nadia, like, it says black robes instead of, like, a burqa. Yeah. And, like...
The religion isn't really named. Yeah. The country isn't really named.
Yeah, in my mind, I pictured Syria, but I know that the author, Mohsin Hamid, is Pakistani, and he had actually written this book with Lahore, Pakistan, in mind. But, of course, like, he left that out because he... Like, I mean, one, he couldn't bear to write his home city and like talk about the terrible things that are happening. But, and also he wanted it to be like universal, right? Like people could relate to it even if like they didn't know the name.
Because the story and like the entire narrative is about refugee migrants and kind of and being displaced from your home.
Yeah.
Right.
And I just love how like within the first page you know that there is civil unrest and like there are militants and there is some violence happening on the borders on the outskirts of the city, but people are trying their very best to live ordinary lives.
And
it's interesting because like this relationship between Saeed and Nadia, it's happening in a war-torn country, but like they try very hard to have like a resemblance of normality.
Yeah. What the book does so well is establish in the beginning that these were normal people at once. Like they were people just like you and me living in a city with like boring ass jobs. Like
Like Nadia works at an insurance company and like Saeed works at a marketing company for like billboards.
For billboards.
And it's like, wow, two like very mundane jobs in a not very mundane circumstance.
Yeah. But if you think about like every country, like people need marketing services, people need insurance, you know.
Yeah, well, people have to survive regardless of what country that they're living in.
Yeah.
But what I found really interesting is that, in the beginning of the book, we realize that Saeed and Nadia are kind of polar opposites.
Yeah.
And it's just, and the thing is, like, those differences would have been marked as red flags in normal circumstances.
Mm.
But because they're in, like in a city of, like, in a city that's like about to explode pretty much, they like,
well, I don't,
they're attracted to each other.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely physically attracted to each other. I mean, he notices her in class and can't stop thinking about her. She thinks he has like a good carefree, like smile.
Yeah. Right? But like Saeed is okay. Like, I think we should probably lay out the differences because this pretty much changes the dynamics of their relationship throughout the book, because in the beginning, those differences like seem to be kind of like charms.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, as they migrate, it becomes more and more like it makes them drift apart from each other.
Yeah.
But Saeed, he is from like he lives with his parents and he has good relationship with his parents.
And his family is devout.
And his family is devout. It doesn't say what religion, but they do pray in a regular fashion.
Yeah.
And Nadia, she is a financially independent woman. She lives by herself. She severed ties with her family because she wanted to move out and have her own life.
She's not above lying to her landlady to get a good deal.
Yeah. And also like she wears these black robes to cover her body and face, but she's not religious at all. It's like the black robes that she wears, it's to send a signal to men to not, like, in her words, to not fuck with her.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's... I mean, if I was Saeed, that would kind of be a red flag, being like, you're wearing religious robes, but you're not religious. I don't know how I feel about that. But, you know, in a city where things are about to explode, like, you want to have a bond with someone, right?
Well, like, I don't even think that... Like, because when they first started dating, they didn't really, I don't think they intended on staying together or like being migrant together, right? They were just
dating
and seeing if it worked out. And I think that's part of the tragedy, but also a big part of the story is because they're forced into a situation where they had no choice but to stick together. They had like these relations kind of, they developed in different ways, right? If the civil war never came to their city, I can see like the story ending with them just breaking up after a few months when they kind of realized that they weren't 100% compatible or they weren't exactly what they were looking for.
Yeah, I mean, like, during their courtship, they have to, like, there's a lot of obstacles, right? Like, curfew and, like, her living in an area where you have to, like, go through a checkpoint and him, like, having to dress up as a woman in black robes in order to get into her apartment. So there's a lot of hoops that they have to go through. And really, their relationship doesn't have a label. They don't call themselves boyfriend and girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Saeed is also... You know, when they do get physical, Saeed says, oh, I don't want to have actual intercourse until we're married. And Nadia, who is very confident with her sexuality and her sensuality, she's just like, what are you talking about? Like,
the first thing she says, are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
And also, like, he proposes to her at some point during, like, I think it's after his mother dies, right?
I don't know. He doesn't propose to her.
Doesn't propose?
No. Because you mentioned it. Yeah, his mom dies in a very, like...
A stray shell hits her while she was, like...
Yeah, reading that part was pretty jarring. I was just like, oh, snap. Like, that just happened in a span of one sentence, but okay.
Well, the book does a good job. Well, the book does interesting things with time, right? Kind of... It's not exactly linear.
Yeah.
Because it foreshadows the future very explicitly, like saying that this is the last year that Saeed's mom and dad will be together.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. So you kind of knew something was going to happen.
Yeah, and you also don't know how much time has passed in the relationship between Saeed and Nadia. But what happens though is the things in the city. So like the civil war in the city gets really heated, and now it's like now the area that Saeed and Nadia are living in, it's kind of a war zone.
Well,
now
the militants take over pretty much.
Yeah.
And then basically they decide they need to get out of there if they were to survive, because the militants, they don't specify what type of militants they are, but you know, from the clues you can tell that they are probably religious fundamental.
Yeah.
Like extremists.
Well, right? Like what happens is that things are getting intense, and Saeed suggests to Nadia, oh, like, you're living by yourself, it's dangerous, and I know you're independent and you want to prove to everybody that you can take care of yourself, but right now, like, it's safer if you moved in with my family. And like the day when she like comes over to the comes over to Saeed's family, family's home, Saeed's mother dies, and therefore like Nadia is kind of like stuck in this position of like, well, providing comfort for both Saeed's father and Saeed.
Well, she comes after.
Or like the day after or something like that.
Like during the funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she was supposed to like move in with them anyway. And that kind of catalyzed her to stay like kind of permanently with Saeed's family. And I guess we can move on to like the doors, the so-called magical doors.
Right. So this is a big part of the story, is that there are these doors that lead you to other places. And yeah, like every single chapter has like a non sequitur, like passage about like a certain story with the doors. So, you know, certain stories are like a family going through a door that gets picked up by police, or this Japanese Yakuza dude seeing Filipino women coming out of a door and like following them creepily. Almost like, yeah, like what did you think about the doors and like the non sequiturs?
Okay, so first off, when I heard about this book, it was being marketed as a magical realism book. Mm-hmm. So I expected it to be way more magical than it actually was, because Hamid's novel is pretty much really, really grounded in realism, and the only slivers of magical realism are these doors. And
I think it was I thought it was smart, because the doors, pretty much like traveling through the doors, pretty much took the place of, you know, getting yourself out of the country via air, land, or sea. Right. And if he had kept that part of the journey in, we would have read a lot, like half the book would have been just like the dangers of traveling like out of a country, right? So this way he can focus on what happens after you get to a place where you're no longer, like, where you are no longer, like, where you don't belong.
I have a quote here from an NPR interview that Hamid did, and he said, I wanted to explore what made you leave and what happened when you arrived.
Yeah.
And that is the reason why he created these magical doors in his book. And strangely enough, that was like the first idea he had when he was drafting the novel. Mm. So like the whole like door concept was at the center of the novel. And I thought it was a really clever way too, to like just focus on the important parts, like the concerns that a lot of immigrants and refugees have, like, oh, will I survive the journey? Will I ever be able to see my family and home again? Will I, like, how long will it take me to adapt to this new foreign place? So I think the doors did a really good job establishing those fears and concerns before each character stepped through the door. But yeah, I guess we could talk about like how Saeed and Nadia came to the decision to leave their home country.
Well, their home country became unsafe to stay in.
But like, I mean, it was unsafe to stay in, but they were planning to leave with Saeed's father. But Saeed's father, he said, oh, this is where your mother is and I don't want to leave.
Yeah.
And this kind of like puts Saeed in a very difficult position because like there's a quote in this book that says, when we migrate, we murder those we leave behind in our lives.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, if for Saeed's case, it's pretty literal, because if he leaves his father behind, there's a high chance that his dad will not survive the militants' rule, and it's strange because Saeed and Nadia's fears are very different from each other before they decide to go through the door.
Well, so the book also, like, the book is in third person, right? So you get to see the thought process of a lot of characters, not just Saeed, not just Nadia, but also of her father, of his father, of his mother, and a lot of the side characters too, right? From the non sequiturs. And there's a couple paragraphs from Saeed's dad's perspectives saying that a big reason why he didn't want to go was he knew that if he went, he would just slow them down. Like, they wouldn't be able, like, the chance of them surviving
is higher
if he's not with them too.
Yeah.
Right. So there's all these, like, this push and pull, right? Because, you know, obviously Saeed's a very, like, pious and faithful son, right? So leaving his father behind would cause a lot of guilt. And then with Nadia also, like,
Nadia's,
I think his father can see through, like, kind of like, maybe this isn't going to work out, you know, the relationship. Like, he said something like he wishes that she would marry his son, but regardless, like, to make sure he's okay.
Yeah.
Right. Take care of him for me.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, which is like a big responsibility to put on someone who is not your daughter-in-law. But yeah. But yeah, with Nadia, like, she's not in the same situation as Saeed. She's kind of severed her contacts with her family. And with her, it's just all about, like, she's almost impatient to leave, to get through the door. And when they do finally go through the first door, when they step through the first door, Saeed's like looking back. And it's almost as if he wants to go back and take back his decision to leave in the first place.
I mean, I think, and we saw this in, like, when reading The Sympathizer and also parts of reading The Best We Can Do by T. Bowie, is, you know, you see different types of refugees, right? And two main kind of ways to look at the refugee experience. Like, one side you have, all right, this is the situation now. We have to survive. We have to make the best of it. Let's find out how to survive in this new reality that we see ourselves in. And the other side is like constantly looking back, like thinking about what was lost or what we left behind wanting it back.
Yeah. I mean, with Nadia, like, she mentions in like her inner monologue that she's afraid that stepping through the door will mean that she's losing her autonomy because she will have to depend on Saeed and Saeed will have to depend on her. And she doesn't know what country she's going to end up in. So there's also a sense of like, oh, well, will the place that we're going to be in a better situation than the one that we're coming from.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that her fears are very much stemmed in, because she comes from a country where, like, women are not as free as mm-hmm. the men. I mean, I'm sure there's a better way to put that in phrase, but...
Well, it's literally they're not as free. Like, they're people... Even in those early passages, people are, you know, groping her at the bank. People are yelling at her on the streets for, like, riding a bike by herself.
Yeah, and she has to, like, carry weapons around with her just in case, like, you know, someone tries to mug her. But yeah, like, the first place that they end up in is the Greek Isle of Mykonos.
Yeah, it's a touristy island.
Yeah, we found out through one of our book club members that Mykonos is actually a very famous island for American tourists who like to party, and you know, a lot of them are gay as well.
So yeah, it's a big queer scene there, apparently.
Yeah, a very big queer scene. I did not know that when I was reading that chapter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now it makes more sense knowing that, but they arrive and it's pretty much...
It's a refugee camp.
It's a refugee camp. Yeah. Yeah. It's not even like, it's no one's final destination. It's just like a
holding camp.
Yeah. The holding place. Yeah.
And everyone's always on the lookout for new doors to lead somewhere else, because apparently at this point, the magical doors become like a international problem. Not at all allusion to the refugee crisis that we're seeing right now, but basically,
it's a great allegory.
The rich countries are clamping down on doors leading to their countries, but leaving the doors open to other poorer countries open, hoping that they'll just go back to where they came from.
Yeah,
and
yeah, so, and it's not just like the refugees leaving through these doors. I mean, we see militants going through doors into richer countries, and like.
Yeah, one of the non sequiturs was basically a door leading into the country that Saeed and Nadia are from, and you see someone come in with like an AK and leave to go do the fighting. And that's, you know, I kind of, to me, that wasn't like, is it an allusion or is it an allegory of, you know, like these extremist groups bringing like
recruiting
people from elsewhere to come fight their wars to, you know, to.
Yeah.
Expand their state, you know.
Yeah. And it's interesting because in an interview with Muhsin Hamid, he said that these magical doors, I think I have the exact quote. The doors, although they're not true to physics, I think they're emotionally true to our current technological reality. And that's true because, you know, you can open up your computer or phone mm-hmm. and you can just go on social media and you're there. Like our screens in the real world are kind of like doors to other countries.
And so social media also plays a big part in the story too.
Yes.
Nadia is very much connected. Like, she likes to check news, go social media, whereas Saeed's a little bit more like limits his screen time.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's very, very disciplined in his screen time, which is, I couldn't deal with one hour a day personally.
Well, okay, so they arrive at this refugee camp, and pretty much, like we said, it's like a holding area, and there really is no hope for the refugees unless they have, like, they brought a lot of resources with them when they were stepping through the door.
Yeah.
Because they still have to, like, pay for food or, like, manage to find their way.
Right.
Into shelter and stuff like that.
And there's still this like animosity brewing with the locals, right?
The refugees can't go to like touristy areas. They're like completely barred from it.
And you kind of see at this point, like there's not a lot of hope, right? There's a lot of people trying to survive, but there isn't a lot of optimism or hope within the migrants, not just Saeed and Nadia, but like their community of migrants themselves. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they decide that they have to. Well, the first chance they get, they leave, and that comes through
Nadia's.
So yes, because Nadia gets injured from running away from some
ruffians,
locals,
yeah,
and befriends a local girl that's volunteering at the hospital, And she's the one that hooks them up with like this new door.
Yeah, they get access to this door that's supposed to lead them to a better country. So I guess we will move on to the second leg of this book. And the second country that they end up in is London. And it's actually...
The country's England. Oh, the city is London.
City is London. Sorry.
Don't want to be that guy.
I just wanted to...
Pushing my glasses. Actually...
I'm sorry. I'm talking. I am not used to talking.
Yeah, so the second leg is they end up becoming squatters at this like Jane Austen like mansion, I guess, in the
middle of the country somewhere in London. And it's so funny to me because it's just like, can you imagine like you're the owner of that house and like you and then you find out like through your housekeeper
that
you have like 50 squatters from different countries. Like, imagine that. That is like crazy.
So this takes Pete. So they move from being in a refugee camp now to becoming essentially illegal aliens, right? In the country.
Yeah. But like the home that they're staying in, it's not just people from Saeed and Nadia's country. They're refugees from all over the world. Yeah. So there's a lot of Nigerians in their house.
The house that they stay in specifically is the Nigeria house, I guess you can call it.
And the house, like, that's the mansion that is like next door to them.
Or nearby, yeah. There's a nearby house that's full of people from Saeed and Nadia's home country. And this is where you kind of start seeing rifts between the way that Nadia and Saeed both approach being refugees, right? Nadia decides to, you know, get involved with her local community, essentially, like becoming part of the council. Like, she's the only non-Nigerian voice on this council, whereas Saeed starts becoming really, really...
Saeed, he's not interacting with the other housemates. He's locking himself in the room and only coming out when he really needs to. Mm-hmm. And he's become more pious. Like, he's... Like, before, he prayed, like, semi-regularly, and now he's praying, like, more often.
You find him kind of doubling down more and more into his religion and his
traditions.
Right? Yeah. He wants to move to the house
that his countrymen are from.
Even though he would be giving up his own bedroom for a shared room.
Yeah, like that situation was like really interesting to read about, because like Nadia's like, why would we give up like our own home and move to a place where we'll be separated and like just to be with like people who look like us. And I just thought that was really funny because you see that in real life, right?
Yeah,
where there are like immigrants who only stay within their community, only stay within their ethnic community and only speak the language that that their country's main language is. And then there are like immigrants who actually go out and try to branch out a little bit more.
Yeah. And so during this time, you kind of see that the whole country is resisting the migrants, right? They shut off their utilities, they shut off their power, they try to drive them out through force.
Yeah.
And then you kind of see the squatters take different approaches to dealing with this animosity, right?
Yeah, some of the Nigerians, they're all for like peaceful protest and...
Yeah, the Nigerians are for nonviolent protest, whereas the people from... Saeed and Nadia's country. Home country favor more like armed resistance, and they actually they have a door back to their home country that they start bringing in weapons from.
Yeah, but there is kind of like the standoff between the migrants and the natives
pretty much,
because neither one is willing to cross this line, right? Like for the nativists who are like, we don't want you squatters here, we don't want you migrants here, to really quote unquote solve the problem for them means genocide, and they're not gonna like cross line.
The book makes the point that they in the end they decided the price of what they wanted isn't worth like having to face their children and telling them what they had to do to secure it. They were all for like roughing people up and like scaring them, but it came down to like literally wiping them out. They didn't want to do that. So they move on to this kind of this compromise state where the government contracts, pretty much hires the migrants to build migrant housing, like new housing projects.
Mm-hmm.
And in return for their labor, they would get a guaranteed spot.
Yeah.
In like, you know, in in the new housing project, like a new a flat, pretty much.
And there's like a time tax, pretty much.
Yeah. So the longer you stay in the country, it starts, you know,
the like, more benefits you
the
get.
Less you pay, and then after, at a certain point, you start receiving payment from the migrants.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was a pretty good policy suggestion.
It's a good policy suggestion that probably will not work because we live in the darkest timeline. Yeah. No, like what's really funny to me is like when this book came out, it was like right after Brexit happened and people were marketing this book as the first post-Brexit book. And it's just so funny because like one of the locations is in London and there's like this whole like migrants versus nativists like conflict and it's not really that unlike the conflict that we're going through right now.
So
it was just really funny because the book kind of like took it way over the top, right? Because magical doors, like there's no like legal process,
right? And it's just something that happens, just like you know, with crises, refugees happen.
Yeah.
Like they're a result of crises that you have to plan for and deal with.
Yeah, like because of people, you know? Like one message I took away from this book, and this book is very much a message book, I would say. But the message that I took away was you can't stop immigration. You can't stop migration. It's always been like a part of human history, and like this like a delusion that Americans and a lot of Western countries have of like, oh, we're gonna stop people from immigrating into our countries. It doesn't like other doors will pop up, like other ways will come up. You can never really stop the flow of human migration.
Unless so you're willing to cross that line and just
murder unless you're willing to cross that line. But no reasonable person wants to do that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, this delusion, like, you need to kind of stop having those delusions and just kind of like accept the fact that you can't stop it, so might as well prepare for it. Might as well like make policies and compromises for it. I mean, like we mentioned the intermittent chapters earlier, and I just want to bring them back because it shows different kinds of migrants, right?
And different reactions to migrants.
Yeah, different reactions to it. And we see one where there was like an Englishman. I think he was English. I'm not sure if he was American, but
Portuguese, I want to say.
Was he Portuguese? Yeah. No, I'm talking about the man who decides to leave his home because he's depressed and like I think it was the British guy.
I'm
not sure. It was some Western country, wealthy Western country, and there's this man who has you know,
he's depressed.
His wife left him. His kid is all grown up and doesn't visit him anymore. And he decides that he's going to take his own life. But then a door appears in his home, and he's like, "Well, might as well see where this goes before I take my own life." And he walks through the door, and he just ends up in a random country. And just never decides to go back to his home. He mails a letter to his family and says, "Hey,
wish you were here."
He's like, "Hey, I'm here if you want to look for me, but I'm not going back."
Yeah.
And he's like, and that's what I've seen. Like, it's very similar to what I've seen with expats. You know, like a lot of people my age, they're going to Asian countries to teach English for a year, and it's been like 4 years, and I'm like, "Are you ever going to come back?" And they're like, "I don't know, like maybe."
If it's JET, it's 3-year contract, so you get to renew once, so 6 years max. Some people stay longer,
but you know how people are. They're like, "Oh, I'm only going to stay there for a year, or like 2 years," and then they end up staying there for like half a decade.
Well, I mean, if you have the basic needs to survive, like, you can do whatever you want. I think that's a perfect segue into, like, basically, Nadia and Saeed are offered a chance to have a place to live in London, but they get stuck in this, like, bureaucratic nightmare where, like, they kind of realize to get that flat that they're working towards, they're going to have to work, like, a long, long time to get there.
Yeah. The whole thing is like everyone is working overtime to get their name, not even bumped up, but to like maintain
the list,
their ranking on the list.
So, and then Nadia can sense, like, they both can sense that they're not really happy there in London. So they decide to move again to take another door.
Yeah, and this door leads them to Marin County, it's California.
North of the Bay Area, just north of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Which I always thought was Marin County was like a rich county, but apparently
there's like a bubble. Okay. Like there's like a bubble of like really wealthy neighborhoods, and then like outside it's just like it's not that great.
Yeah. And they end up in California. They set up a shanty, and they're part of this, I guess, another migrant community, but this one is more with more services, right? So this, I mean, each time they move, it's like a different characterization of how.
I think it's like different stages of the refugee experience, right? Yeah. Like one is like escape, fleeing your country and getting stuck in like the holding area.
Yeah, one is a refugee camp. One is kind of like
illegal immigration.
Illegal immigration. And the third, this one is kind of.
Illegal immigration with some agency.
Like. Yeah, they have more agency. In Marin County, they're able to find an actual community, right?
Yeah.
Where, Saeed finds a church that accepts him and that he can pray at. And Nadia finds a job. And I think they're able to reclaim some semblance of independence.
Yeah.
Right?
Because, like, in London, like when they were squatting, obviously that house wasn't theirs. Yeah. And even when they got moved out into like
the work camp,
into the work camp, it's a work camp. It's not really a place that they can call their own. So in Marin County, even though they're living in like the shanty town, mm-hmm. like they're, I guess like their little shelter, it's theirs. Like they get to keep that. They have some ownership over that.
And then in this situation, they kind of, the differences that start to build. Like, they get to a place where they can decouple amicably. Yeah.
Like, right. I think the book says, oh, their relationship has kind of fizzled out.
Yeah.
And their relationship kind of resembled more of that of siblings.
Yeah, because they went through this very harrowing experience together.
Yeah.
And so they have that connection. But the passion, like, if this, like we said, if they had just, like, dated normally, if their country hadn't been overtaken... Or by civil war, they probably would have like broken up and by now, right?
But there is this very powerful bond between them, and also it's like they're both from the same place, and like she is his only connection to his family, like the only person who probably understands where he comes from, how he's changed, and has kind of like been through every single step with him. Mm. And even though like he doesn't really love her anymore. It's just like, well, like, am I going to give that up? Am I going to give up someone who understands all of me completely?
But then he also, like, all the things that start bothering them about each other that should have bothered, like, all the red flags that we talked about at the beginning start bothering him.
Yeah.
Right? He starts being bothered about why she wears the rose when she doesn't have to. And she starts being bothered by how religious he is, right?
Yeah.
And how that's become a bigger part of his life.
And how she, like, she's also being bothered by, like, how he's only seeking out his community and not really trying to, like, I mean, I wouldn't say...
She's also having bisexual love dreams,
too. Yeah, bisexual love dreams, too. Like, the whole, like the girl that she meets in Mykonos who helps her find a door to London...
starts becoming her fantasy.
I mean, I knew that like she was bisexual at that point, but like once our book club member Ani, who's been on this podcast before, said, "Oh, Mykonos is like a very big queer scene." I'm like, "Oh, oh, makes sense now."
Yeah. So I kind of felt like the decoupling was a little clean, but I guess I don't know. In terms of the story, it made sense because they come to a place where. They realize if they stayed any longer, it would be a more messy breakup.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And they do mention that at the end of the book. Like we said, we don't know how much time passes in their relationship or how long they're staying in each location. But when they meet at the end...
Well, I think it was about a year, they said. From the first door to Marin County was about a year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, they gradually drift apart. They, used to meet like once a week just to make sure the other was in a firm foothold, like they're in a secure place. And then
this is after they break up.
They break up. And then it's like once every month because, you know, people get busy or they just really don't want to hear about how your relationship with the person dating.
I think they talk about social media, like wanting to avoid.
Yeah.
Because I guess she starts dating the cook from the food co-op that she works at, who is a lesbian.
Yeah.
And he starts dating the daughter of the preacher of the church he starts going to.
Yeah, and the daughter of the preacher, she's like...
whose mother was from his home country.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So it's like they don't really want to talk about their new significant others. So it's like once a month, and then soon like they just kind of drift off and go their own ways without any contact.
Yeah.
And when we get to the last chapter of the book, it like so much time has passed. They're both fully grown with separate lives, and they meet back in their home country.
Yeah, it's a half a century later, so about 50 years later.
Yeah,
they appear back, and I think there was a really interesting passage that they talked about, which is like, imagine what would have happened if we had gotten married,
mm-hmm.
or if she had pregnant, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's a really interesting kind of thought exercise, because there are situations of couples like Saeed and Nadia who end up having to stay together because of marriage or because of kids.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of refugee families that have to stick together, and how that would have affected their relationship as well.
Yeah, but a lot of immigrants also do like marriage just for like a chance to leave their country too.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, like things would have been a lot messier. And I guess they both express this relief, right? Like it's like, oh, thank God we didn't like have sex, and like I didn't accidentally get pregnant, or like all these things.
Yeah,
because we would just be miserable together. And
the one thing that I guess the last thing I want to talk about is the last non sequitur during when they were in Marin County was about a old woman in I guess Palo Alto, right?
Yeah,
who has lived in her house for 70 years and has seen basically her neighborhood change from being a place where everyone looked like her to now where no one looked like her. Not even her favorite granddaughter, who is like part Chinese, half Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was that phrase, right? Like, we're all migrants in time.
Yeah. Right.
We're saying that even if you don't go anywhere, things change around you.
Yeah, like not even just like talking about location. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, if you lived in New York City in like the 1970s, New York City is a very different city now. But it's also just through like circumstances, right?
Yeah.
Like you can, like the city might not have changed that much, but you know, like things happen to you and you change and grow into a different person each time.
Yeah. I liked how at the end, the place they ended up is probably the best place for them, because it's a place where multiculturalism is becoming normal, is becoming the new normal. And it kind of ends on this very, like, to me, like a very like go USA type of like tone, which is like, of course, the best place to end up is America in California.
I don't know. It seemed like neither of them stayed in Marin County. Like it seemed like they traveled a lot.
But America's still the best in this story.
Fun fact, Mohsin Hamid, the author, so he lived in the U.S. for 17 years.
Mm.
I'm guessing that he was born in the U.S., but I'm not sure.
Okay.
But he lived in the U.S. for 17 years. He lived in Britain for like another decade.
Uh-huh.
And now he's living in Pakistan.
Okay.
So he is very familiar with migrating into like different continents, different cultures.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting portrayal of not just the refugee experience, but also just like how different places accept multiculturalism.
I felt like reading the book helped me empathize with like the refugee experience, right? Because personally, I have never been a refugee. My parents weren't really refugees. My grandparents were. But like reading through this, you kind of get the full, like a sampler plate of what it would be like to go from a, like, because like we said, it starts off in a very normal, like almost mundane setting, right? These are office workers in the country. They're taking night classes, and all of a sudden everything gets taken from them. from their services to their homes, and then they have to figure out what to do.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I thought it was also, it did remind me why refugees leave their country. Nobody really wants to leave their home where where their family is and they know the language and the customs. I mean, no one would just leave on the drop of a hat, really, mm-hmm. unless they had a real reason to go. But in the intermittent stories, we see different types of migrants. We see these two Filipino girls in Tokyo.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure their fates did not end very well.
They were the ones being followed by the Yakuza murderer dude.
Yeah. But it made me think of how there are a lot of Filipino immigrants in Japan, and most of them are women, and they come for opportunities because they want to advance their careers.
Same with Taiwan. There's a lot of Filipino and even Vietnamese women as. They work as housekeepers or nurses.
Or nurses for a better chance for their children and stuff like that.
Yeah, and everywhere, immigrants are seen as, oh, they're taking their jobs, or I don't like foreigners. And, xenophobia isn't uniquely a Western thing.
No. Everybody's racist. Everybody is racist. one of my favorite intermittent chapters, though, was that scene. I think it was in Germany. There was that old German man.
Oh, the one that the fisherman or
no, that old German man on his balcony, and he's and he sees a door that's right underneath his building, and he sees this Brazilian artist keep passing through, and then one day he just invites him up to his balcony, and they don't know each other's languages, but they're chatting anyway, and then he goes through the door to Brazil, and he's seeing where this painter guy is from, and then they become a couple.
Yeah.
And they're just two old men, and I'm oh, they found each other at the end of their lives. How sweet. And
it's a very there's just so many different it just shows there are other ways to react to foreigners than hate and fear.
Yeah, fear and hate really doesn't do much when it comes to progressing things. So yeah, it was a very optimistic book. I thought so too,
even though I did feel it was I can feel the tenseness of just the whole refugee experience, but in the end I felt it gave a very it was a very it ends on a positive note, right?
Yeah. I think it also ends on a realistic note because I don't want to be a cynic, but long relationships that last a lifetime, they're very rare. Mm. And, a lot of couples, they do lose that passion midway through their relationship.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a very realistic way to portray a relationship, same time have this dose of optimism.
This was definitely a relationship where it was running, at least initially, purely on passion.
Yeah.
And and lust, I guess. There is very much physical and superficial attraction. But then, the core, the red flags, the reasons they broke up were always there
from the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, I enjoyed following the relationship, just their experiences. And I like the book.
I had very different expectations when I heard about this book and read the summary for it. I thought when Saeed and Nadia would go through a door, they would end up in different places in the world. And then the book would just be about them trying to find each other again. But okay. I'm very glad that it didn't do that. Because I feel like my anxiety would have been off the charts. It's how are they going to connect? How are they going to go back through the same place?
When you first hear about the doors, you're not really sure how it works, right? Yeah. But I guess it is a one-on-one type of thing.
Yeah, we were mentioning a lot of other fantasy series that uses doors, magical portals. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot, Narnia and Neverwhere, Alice in Wonderland. So it's definitely a trope that's been around for a very long time in literature. But I like the way that Mohsin Hamid used it in his book.
Yeah.
It's very simplistic and I think it served a good purpose.
Yeah. Any final thoughts?
I don't know. I hugged my Kindle after I finished the book.
It's a really good read. And it's a really quick read, too. So for those of you who haven't read the book yet, but after listening to us talk about want to read it, go read it. It's good. Thumbs up. I enjoyed it, too. I really liked I thought it was just a really good... It's a book you want to show other people, right? You want to let other people to read and share an experience, too, which is good, which is a good thing for a book to be. And that's our discussion on Mohsen Hamid's Exit West. You can find it at your local bookstore or on Amazon or wherever you find your books, Kindle, libraries.
Yeah. Libraries. Always support your local libraries.
Riri, what's our Books and Boba book pick for August?
So our pick for August is The Devotion of Suspect X by Keigo Higashino. And it is our first work of fiction that has been translated.
Okay.
So, it's by, like I said, Keigo Higashino, and he is a very celebrated crime novelist in Japan. So we're reading a crime novel, heads up.
Nice.
And it's translated by Alexander O. Smith. Now, I'm always like very hesitant to read translated works because I'm as someone who is kind of semi-bilingual, I know that things get lost in translation all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked up the translator, Alexander O. Smith, and I found out that he has done a lot of translated works for video games.
Okay.
And he was the translator for the Phoenix Wright series. And I'm like, oh, snap, I love that game. So, yeah. Okay. Like, my trust is in this man.
That's exciting. This will be book number 12 for our book club. We're almost coming up to our one-year anniversary for Books and Boba.
Yeah, think about it. If you've been here since the beginning, you've read 12 books
in
the span of 1 year.
That's more books than I've read in the last 12 years.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
But yeah, looking forward to reading that book. As always, you can chat with us and discuss our book picks through our Goodreads forums by going to goodreads.com and looking up Books and Boba. You can also follow us on Twitter, where Rira does a really good job not only keeping up with book news, but creating graphics for our stuff, too.
I have a lot of time.
And yeah, thanks for listening to our discussion of Exit West. Tune back. We're setting up a couple of really cool author interviews that we're going to hopefully get done over the next month or so. So stay updated. Subscribe to us on iTunes, on Google Play Music, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Keep reading, you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Books and Boba was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited by Marvin Yue. Don't forget to join the Books and Boba Goodreads group to share your thoughts about our monthly book picks as well as share updates and book news with your fellow book club members. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of podcasts featuring unique voices from the Asian American community. If you like Books and Boba, check out our other great podcasts such as The Collabcast, the official podcast of the collaboration movement, taking a weekly look at pop culture and the creative life from an Asian American perspective. Check out The Collabcast and the other great programs of the Potluck Collective by going to the website www.podcastpotluck.com.